Chapter 24. The Extraction of the Master. Everything in Volan's bedroom returned to the way it had been before the ball. Volant was sitting on the bed in his nightshirt, only Hella was no longer rubbing his leg, but serving dinner on the table where the chess game had taken place earlier. Kuravyov and Azazello had removed their tailcoats and were sitting near the table. Naturally, they were joined by the cat, who chose to keep his bow tie, even though by now it had turned into an absolutely filthy rag. Swaying, Margarita approached the table and leaned on it. Voland beckoned her as before and motioned for her to sit down next to him.
"Did they wear you out much?" Voland asked.
"Not at all, Messiah," Margarita replied, her voice barely audible.
"Noblesse oblige," noted the cat and poured Margarita a glass of transparent liquid.
"Is that vodka?" Margarita asked weakly.
The cat jumped up in his seat with indignation.
"I beg pardon, my queen," he rasped. "Would I ever allow myself to offer vodka to a lady? This is pure alcohol."
Margarita smiled and attempted to push the glass aside.
"Go ahead and drink," said Volant,
and Margarita immediately picked up the glass.
"Sit, Hella,"
Volant ordered and explained to Margarita.
"This night of the full moon is a night of celebration, and I will dine in the close company of my entourage and servants. So how do you feel? How did you find this exhausting ball?"
"Staggering," rattled Kurofioff. "Everyone was enchanted, enamoured, practically crushed. So much tact, so much skill, so much charm and charisma."
Volant raised his glass silently and clinked it with Margarita's. Margarita drank obediently, thinking she would expire on the spot from the pure alcohol. But nothing bad happened. A vigorous warmth flowed through her stomach. She felt a soft spasm in the back of her neck, and her strength returned, as after a long, refreshing sleep. Moreover, she now felt incredibly hungry. Remembering that she had eaten nothing since the previous morning, she grew even hungrier. She began to gulp down the caviar greedily. Behemoth cut himself a slice of pineapple, salted it, peppered it, and ate it. Then he downed his second shot of alcohol with such gusto that everyone applauded. After Margarita had had a second shot, the lights in the candelabra became brighter, and the flames in the fireplace burned hotter. She did not feel the least bit drunk. Sinking her white teeth into a piece of meat, Margarita savoured the juices flowing from it while watching Behemoth slather mustard on an oyster.
"Why don't you put some grapes on top?" Hella asked quietly, shoving the cat in the side.
"And ask you not to school me," replied Behemoth. "Fear not, I have sat at my share of tables."
"Oh, how pleasant to dine like this, simply by the fireside," buzzed Kurofioff, "in a tight circle."
"No, forgot," objected the cat. "A ball has a certain charm and grandeur."
"There's nothing charming about it, or grand either. Those idiotic bears, plus the tigers in the bar, nearly gave me a migraine with their constant roaring," said Volant.
"Very well, Messiah," said the cat. "If you find that the ball lacked grandeur, I will immediately adopt the same opinion."
"Watch it,"
Volant said to that.
"I was joking," the cat said meekly. "As for the tigers, I'll have them roasted."
"You can't eat tiger," said Hella.
"Is that what you think? Then let me tell you a story,"
replied the cat, and grinning with pleasure, recounted the tale of how he once wandered the desert for 19 days with nothing to eat but the meat of a tiger he had slain. Everyone listened to this amusing narrative with great interest, and the moment that Behemoth concluded it, they all shouted in unison, "Lies!"
"And the most interesting thing about these lies," said Volant, "is that they are utter and complete lies from the first word to the last."
"Oh, really? Lies!"
exclaimed the cat, and everyone expected him to protest, but he just said quietly,
"History will be our judge."
"But tell me," Margot asked Azazello, now that the vodka had revived her, "did you shoot that former baron?"
"Well, naturally," Azazello replied. "How could I not? He absolutely had to be shot."
"I was so startled," Margarita exclaimed. "It happened so unexpectedly."
"Nothing unexpected about it,"
objected Azazello, while Karofioff began to wail and whine.
"Who wasn't startled? I myself was quaking in my booties. Bang! Slam! The baron on the floor!" "I nearly had hysterics," added the cat, licking a spoonful of caviar.
"But here is what I cannot understand," Margarita spoke, the golden sparks from the crystal reflecting in her eyes. "Surely all this music and noise must have been heard outside."
"Of course not, my queen," Karofioff explained. "One must plan these things so as not to be heard. One must be careful."
"Yes, yes. The thing is, there was this man on the stairs when Azazello and I walked by, and another at the entrance. I think they were watching your apartment."
"Of course, of course," cried Karofioff. "Of course, my dearest Margarita Nikolaevna, you are confirming my suspicions. Yes, he must have been watching the apartment. I could have easily taken him for some absent-minded professor or a lover languishing about on the stairs. But no, no, something was gnawing at my heart. Oh, he was watching the apartment, and another at the entrance, and the one in the gateway as well."
"I wonder, though, what if they come to arrest you?" asked Margarita.
"They will most certainly come, my charming queen. Undoubtedly they will," replied Karofioff. "I can feel it in my heart that they will come. Not now, of course, but when the time is right. Although I doubt there'll be much to see."
"Oh, how shocked I was to see the baron fall," said Margarita, evidently still reliving the first murder she had ever seen. "You shoot quite well, I suppose."
"Well enough," said Azazello.
"At how many paces?" Margarita asked, somewhat ambiguously.
"Depends on the target," Azazello replied rationally. "It's one thing to hit the critic Latunsky's window with a hammer, and quite another to hit him in the heart."
"In the heart?" exclaimed Margarita, clutching her own for some reason. "In the heart?" she repeated in a hollow voice.
"Who is this critic Latunsky?"
asked Volant, narrowing his eyes at Margarita. Azazello, Karofioff, and Behemoth looked down in embarrassment. Blushing, Margarita replied, "There is this critic. I smashed up his whole apartment earlier this evening."
"Would you listen to that? But why?"
"You see, Messiah," Margarita explained, "he ruined a certain master."
"Why go to such trouble yourself?" asked Volant.
"Allow me, Messiah,"
the cat exclaimed happily, springing from his seat.
"Sit down," Azazello grumbled, rising. "I'll go."
"No," Margarita exclaimed. "No, I beg you, Messiah, there's no need for that."
"As you wish, as you wish," Volant said, and Azazello returned to his seat.
"So, where were we, my dearest Queen Margot?" "Oh, yes, the heart," Karofioff said, and pointed his long finger at Azazello. "As for the heart, he can hit any auricle or ventricle he chooses."
Margarita did not understand right away, but when she did, she exclaimed in surprise, "But you can't see them."
"My dear," buzzed Karofioff, "that's exactly it. You can't. That's the whole point. Anyone can hit something he can see."
Karofioff took a seven of spades out of a table drawer and asked Margarita to mark one of the pips with her fingernail. Margarita chose the one in the upper right-hand corner. Hella hid the card under a pillow and shouted,
"Ready?"
Sitting with his back to the pillow, Azazello drew a black automatic handgun from his trouser pocket, positioned the muzzle over his shoulder, and fired without looking at the bed, sending Margarita into gleeful fright. The seven of spades was extracted from under the ruined pillow. The pip marked by Margarita had a bullet hole in it. I wouldn't want to run across you when you're carrying a gun, said Margarita, casting a coquettish glance at Azazello. She had a passion for all people who could do something exceedingly well.
My dearest queen, Karofiov squeaked. I would not recommend that anyone run across him, regardless of whether he's carrying a gun. I give you my word, as a former choirmaster and precentor, that there'd be little joy in it.
The cat sat scowling during the marksmanship experiment and suddenly announced,
I can beat the trick with a 7.
Azazello growled something in response, but the cat was adamant and demanded not one but 2 guns. Azazello took a 2nd gun out of his back trouser pocket and handed both to the braggart, twisting his mouth in contempt. 2 pips were marked on the 7. The cat took a long time to prepare, looking away from the pillow. Margarita sat plugging her ears with her fingers and gazed at the owl napping on the mantelpiece. The cat then fired both guns, causing Hella to scream, the owl to fall dead from the mantelpiece, and the smashed clock to stop. One of her hands bloodied, Hella howled and plunged her fingernails into the cat's fur. The cat responded by grabbing her hair, and they both began to roll on the floor, entwined in a ball. One of the glasses fell from the table and broke.
"Get the rabid she-devil off of me!"
wailed the cat, trying to fight off Hella, who was sitting astride him. The combatants were separated. Kurofiov blew on Hella's wounded finger, and it healed.
"I can't shoot with everyone talking at me!"
cried Behemoth, trying to reattach a gigantic clump of fur that had been torn from his back.
I would wager, Voland said, smiling at Margarita, that he pulled this stunt on purpose. He's not a bad shot at all.
Hella and the cat made peace and sealed their reconciliation with a kiss. The card was extracted from under the pillow and checked. Besides the pip already hit by Azazello, none had been touched.
It cannot be,
insisted the cat, holding the card to the light from the candelabrum. The merry dinner went on. The candles guttered in the candelabrum, and waves of sweet, dry heat spread throughout the room from the fireplace. Having eaten her fill, Margarita was overcome with a sense of bliss. She watched the misty grey rings from Azazello's cigar float off into the fireplace. She watched the cat catch them on the tip of his sword. She had no desire to leave, even though it was very late by her count. It appeared to be somewhere around 6 in the morning. Taking advantage of a pause in the conversation, Margarita turned to Voland and spoke timidly.
It's probably time for me to go. It's late.
Why are you in such a hurry? Voland asked, politely but somewhat coldly. The others remained silent, pretending to be occupied with the hazy rings of cigar smoke.
Yes, it's time, Margarita repeated, utterly confused. She looked around as if seeking a gown or a robe. Her nakedness suddenly began to embarrass her. She rose from the table.
Voland silently picked up his worn, greasy robe from the bed, and Kurofiov threw it over Margarita's shoulders.
Thank you, Messiah,
Margarita said in a barely audible voice and glanced at Voland inquisitively. He smiled politely and indifferently in response. The blackest sorrow instantly filled Margarita's heart. She felt cheated. It looked as if no one was going to offer her any reward for her services at the ball, and no one bade her stay. At the same time, it was perfectly clear to her that she had nowhere else to go. The thought of returning to the mansion caused an explosion of despair inside her. Should she ask for something herself, as Azazello offered so temptingly back in the Alexandrovsky Gardens? No, never, she said to herself. All the best to you, Messiah, she said aloud, thinking, the sooner I can get out of here, the sooner I can get to the river and drown myself.
Sit,
Voland commanded suddenly. Margarita's face changed, and she sat down.
Isn't there anything you wish to say before you go?
No, Messiah, Margarita replied proudly, except that if you still need me, I shall be glad to perform any service you ask. I am not the least bit tired and had a lot of fun at the ball. If it had gone on longer, I would have gladly offered up my knee to thousands more gallows birds and murderers. Margarita gazed at Volant through a haze, for her eyes had welled up with tears.
Exactly. You are absolutely right,
Volant shouted in a fearsome, hollow voice.
That is how it must be.
That is how it must be,
his entourage echoed.
We have been testing you, Volant continued. Never ask anything of anyone. Nothing, never, particularly of those who are more powerful than you. They will offer it themselves deliver. Sit, proud woman.
Volant tore the heavy robe from Margarita's shoulders, and she again found herself sitting next to him on the bed.
And so, Margot,
Volant continued, softening his voice,
what is it you would like for your services as my hostess tonight? What do you wish for, having spent this entire ball naked? What is the price you put on your knee? What losses have they incurred, these guests of mine, who you call gallows birds? Speak, and speak freely, for I have made you the offer.
Margarita's heart beat faster, and she sighed heavily, pondering something.
Come, be brave,
Volant encouraged.
Awaken your imagination, spur it onwards. Why, the mere presence of a person at the murder of that arrant scoundrel of a baron is worth a reward, particularly if the person is a woman. So?
Margarita felt short of breath. She was just about to utter the cherished wish she had nurtured in her soul, when suddenly she grew pale, opened her mouth, and stared into space.
Frida! 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 Cried an importunate, pleading voice. My name is Frida!
Stumbling, Margarita spoke.
So I can ask for one thing, then?
Demand it, my Donna,
Volant replied, smiling knowingly.
Demand one thing.
Oh, how deftly and clearly he underscored her own words. One thing. Margarita sighed once more and said,
I want them to stop giving Frida the handkerchief that she used to suffocate her child.
The cat raised his eyes to the ceiling and sighed loudly, but said nothing, evidently remembering the incident with his ear at the ball.
In light of the fact,
Volant began, smirking,
that you could not possibly have been bribed by that fool Frida, that would not befit your royal dignity. I simply know not what to do. There is only one thing left, I suppose. Procure a bunch of rags and plug every little crack in my bedroom.
What are you talking about, Messiah?
Margarita asked, puzzling at these truly unfathomable words.
I fully agree, Messiah,
the cat chimed in.
Rags!
And he banged his paw on the table irritably.
I am talking about mercy,
Volant explained, without taking his fiery eye off Margarita.
Every now and then, it manages to unexpectedly and treacherously sneak in through the smallest cracks. Hence the rags.
And I'm talking about the same thing,
exclaimed the cat, backing away from Margarita preemptively and covering his sharp ears with his paws, smeared in pink whipped cream.
Get out,
Volant said to the cat.
You haven't had coffee yet,
replied the cat.
How can I get out? Are guests to be split up into two classes on such a festive night, Messiah? One first grade, and the other, as that sad miser of a bartender put it, of second grade freshness?
Be quiet, Voland ordered. He turned to Margarita and asked, You are evidently a person of exceptional kindness, yes? A person of high moral standards.
No, Margarita said forcefully. I know I cannot lie to you, so I will be frank. I am a thoughtless person. I only plead for Frida because I was careless enough to give her a firm hope. She waits now, Messiah. She believes in my power, and if she is deceived, I'll be in a terrible position. I won't have peace for the rest of my life. There's nothing I can do about it now. It just happened.
Ah, said Voland. That's understandable.
So, will you do it? Margarita asked quietly.
Never, said Voland. You see, my dear queen, there's been a slight misunderstanding here. Each office has its own jurisdiction. I won't deny that our powers are substantial, far more substantial than some less than keen folk might imagine.
Yes, far more substantial,
the cat put in, unable to restrain himself, obviously very proud of the aforementioned powers.
Be quiet, devil take you,
Voland said and continued to Margarita.
It's very simple. What's the sense in doing something outside my, as I put it, jurisdiction? I'm not going to do it. But you can do it yourself.
But will it come true?
Azazello looked at Margarita ironically from the corner of his crooked eye, shook his head imperceptibly, and snorted.
Just do it already. What a pain!
Voland muttered and began to turn his globe, staring at something on it, evidently preoccupied with other business while he spoke to Margarita.
Frida!
Karofioff hinted.
Frida!
Margarita cried in a piercing voice. The door opened, and a dishevelled, naked woman with frenzied eyes ran into the room, no longer showing any signs of drunkenness. She stretched out her arms towards Margarita, who said majestically, You are forgiven. You won't be given the handkerchief any more. Frida howled and fell face down to the floor, prostrating herself in a cross before Margarita. Voland waved his hand, and Frida vanished.
Thank you, and farewell, Margarita said, rising.
Well, Behemoth, said Voland, let us not take advantage of an impractical person on a holiday night.
He turned to Margarita.
Let's not count that, since I didn't actually do anything. What do you want for yourself?
The silence was interrupted by Karofioff, who whispered in Margarita's ear.
My precious Donna, I would advise you to be more reasonable this time, or else your lucky chance may slip away.
I want my lover, the master, returned to me right now, this instant, Margarita said, and her face contorted in a spasm. A gust of wind burst into the room, flattening the candle flames. The heavy curtain drew aside, and the window opened. A full midnight moon, not a waning morning moon, hung far up in the sky. A shawl of green light fell on the floor from the windowsill. In it appeared Ivan's nighttime visitor, he who called himself the Master. He was in his hospital garb, a gown, slippers, and the black cap he never parted with. His unshaven face twitched in a grimace, and he glanced fearfully and insanely at the candle flames as the moonlight boiled around him. Margarita recognized him at once. She moaned, clasped her hands, and ran towards him. She kissed him on the forehead and on the lips, pressing against his stubbly cheek, and the tears she had restrained for so long now poured down her face. She said only one word, meaninglessly repeating it over and over. You, You.
The master pushed her away and said in a hollow voice,
Don't cry, Margot. Don't torment me. I am seriously ill.
He grasped the windowsill, as if intending to leap over it and run away. Baring his teeth, he peered at those sitting in the room and cried out,
I am scared, Margot. I am hallucinating again.
Stifled with sobs and choking on her words, Margarita whispered,
No, 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 don't be afraid. I'm here. I'm here.
Korofiov deftly and inconspicuously pushed a chair towards the master, who sank onto it. Margarita fell to her knees, pressed against the sick man's side, and froze in that position. In her excitement, she did not notice that she was no longer naked, but wearing a black silk cloak. The patient lowered his head and stared at the floor with his sick, gloomy eyes.
Yes, Voland said after a brief silence. They really worked a number on him. Give the man something to drink, knight, he ordered Korofiov.
Drink, drink, Margarita begged the master in a trembling voice. Are you afraid? No, no, trust me. They will help you.
The sick man took the glass and drank its contents. But then his hand twitched and the empty glass shattered on the floor by his feet.
It's for good luck. It's for good luck,
Korofiov whispered to Margarita.
Look, he's coming to already.
Indeed, the sick man's gaze became less savage and disturbed.
But is it really you, Margot? Asked the moonlit guest.
Have no doubt it's me, Margarita replied.
More, Voland ordered.
After the master had emptied the second glass, his eyes became lively and conscious.
Now that's better, Voland said, narrowing his eyes. Let us talk. Who are you?
I am no one any more, said the master, his mouth twisted in a crooked smile.
Where did you just come from?
A madhouse. I am mentally ill, the visitor replied. This was too much for Margarita to bear, and she started to cry again. Then, wiping her tears, she exclaimed,
Horrible words, horrible words! Know that he's a master messiah. Cure him. He is worth it.
Do you know who you are talking to?
Voland asked the visitor.
Whose guest you are?
I do, said the master.
That boy, Ivan Homeless, was my neighbour in the mental hospital. He told me about you. But of course, Voland replied. I had the pleasure of meeting this young man at Patriarch's Ponds. He nearly drove me mad trying to prove I did not exist. But you believe that it is really I, don't you?
I don't seem to have any choice, said the visitor. Though, of course, it would be far more comforting to consider you the fruit of my hallucinations. Forgive me, the master added, catching himself.
Well, if it comforts you, then do so, Voland said politely.
No, no, Margarita said fearfully, and shook the master by his shoulder. Come to your senses. It really is him before you.
The cat put in his word here as well.
Actually, I do happen to resemble a hallucination. Kindly note my silhouette in the moonlight.
The cat climbed into the shaft of moonlight and wanted to keep talking, but was asked to be quiet.
Very well, a sharp silent, he replied. I shall be a silent hallucination.
Tell me, why does Margarita call you a master?
Voland asked. The man smirked and said, A forgivable weakness. She thinks too highly of the novel I wrote.
What about?
It is a novel about Pontius Pilate. Again, the flame swayed and danced in the candles, and dishes clattered on the table as Voland let out a thunderous laugh. but without frightening or surprising anyone. Behemoth applauded for some reason.
About what? About what? About who?
Volan spoke, laughing.
In these times, that's tremendous. You could not find another topic. Let me see it.
Volan stretched out his hand, palm upwards.
I cannot do that, unfortunately, the master replied, because I burned it in the furnace.
Forgive me. I don't believe that, said Volant. It simply cannot be. Manuscripts do not burn.
He turned to Behemoth and said,
Hey, Behemoth, hand me that novel, will you?
The cat instantly jumped up from his seat, and everyone saw that he had been sitting on a thick pile of manuscripts. With a bow, the cat handed the top copy to Volant. Excited to the point of tears, Margarita trembled and shouted,
There's the manuscript! There it is!
She dashed to Volant and added in awe,
Omnipotent! Omnipotent!
Volant took the copy of the manuscript that had been handed to him, turned it, and put it aside. Then, silently, unsmilingly, he stared at the master. But for some reason, the latter suddenly became anxious and disturbed. Wringing his hands, he got up from the chair, turned towards the faraway moon, shuddered, and began muttering.
Even at night, by moonlight, I have no peace. Why did you disturb me? Oh, gods, ye gods of mine.
Margarita grasped the hospital gown and pressed against the master, herself muttering in anguished tears.
Oh, God, why does the medicine not help you?
Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry,
whispered Kurofioff, weaving around the master.
Don't worry, don't worry. One more little glass. I'll have one too.
And the little glass winked and glimmered in the moonlight, and it helped. The master was returned to his seat, and the sick man's face took on a calmer expression.
Well, it's all clear now, Volant said, tapping his long finger on the manuscript.
Exceedingly clear,
the cat confirmed, forgetting his promise to become a silent hallucination.
The gist of this opus is quite obvious to me now. What do you say, Azazello?
He inquired of the silent Azazello.
I say, the latter said nasally, that we ought to drown you. Be merciful, Azazello,
the cat replied,
and don't put such thoughts in my master's head. Believe me, I would haunt you every night in a shroud of moonlight, just like the poor master, and nod to you and beckon you to follow me. How would you like that, oh Azazello?
Well, Margarita,
Volant resumed the conversation.
Speak. What is it you two need?
Margarita's eyes flashed, and she pleaded to Volant.
Will you let me consult him?
Volant nodded, and Margarita began whispering in the master's ear. They heard him answer.
No, it's too late. I want nothing more from life except to see you. But I advise you again, leave me. You'll be ruined with me.
I won't leave you, Margarita replied, and turned to Volant.
I ask you to return us to the basement apartment in the alley of the Arbat. Let the lamp burn, and let everything be as it once was.
The master laughed, grasped Margarita's disheveled curls, and said,
Do not listen to the poor woman, Messiah. Another man already lives in that basement. Besides, nothing can ever be as it was.
He pressed his cheek against his companion's head, hugged Margarita, and muttered,
Poor dear, poor dear.
It cannot, you say? Volant asked. That is true, but we will try nonetheless.
And he said,
Azazello.
A confused and nearly delirious man fell from the ceiling. He was dressed in his underwear, but carried a suitcase and had a hat on for some reason. The man was shaking and cowering in fear.
Magaric,
Azazello asked of the man who had fallen from the sky.
Aloysius Margaritch,
the man replied, trembling.
Upon reading Latunsky's article about this man's novel, did you or did you not write a report claiming that he was keeping illegal literature?
The visitor turned blue, and tears of repentance burst from his eyes.
You wanted to move into his rooms?
Azazello twanged in his most intimate voice. A furious, cat-like hissing came from the dark, and Margarita sank her nails into Aloysius Mogarich's face, wailing,
"Know what a witch can do!"
A commotion ensued.
"What are you doing?" the master cried desperately. "Margot, do not disgrace yourself!"
"I beg pardon, there's nothing disgraceful about it,"
bellowed the cat. Korovyov dragged Margarita away.
"I put in a bath," cried the bloodied Mogarich, his teeth chattering, and then started babbling utter nonsense. "The whitewash alone, the acid treatment."
"You put in a bath. Excellent," Azazello approved. "He'll need to take baths."
And then he shouted,
"Out."
Mogarich turned upside down in midair and flew out of Voland's bedroom through the open window. The master's eyes bulged, and he whispered, "I dare say this beats anything Ivan described." Completely shocked, he looked around and finally said to the cat, "Forgive me, but was it you, mister?"
"Sir?"
He stumbled, unsure of how to address the cat. "Sir, are you the same cat who tried to board the tram?"
"I am,"
the flattered cat confirmed and added.
"It's nice to hear someone address a cat so politely. Cats are usually addressed quite familiarly, even though no cat has ever fraternised with anyone."
"For some reason, I get the impression that you aren't exactly a cat," the master replied hesitantly. "They'll look for me in the hospital," he added timidly to Volant.
"But what will they look for?"
Korofyov soothed, and various papers and folders appeared in his hand.
"Your case file?"
"Yes." Korofyov tossed the case file in the fireplace.
"No papers, no man," he said with satisfaction. "And is this your landlord's tenant register?"
"Yes."
"Who is registered here?" "Aloysius Mogarich."
Korofyov blew on the page of the register.
"There. Not only is he gone, mind you, but he was never there. If your landlord is surprised, just tell him he dreamed up this Aloysius Mogarich. Mogarich who? There never were any Mogariches."
The ring notebook evaporated from Korofyov's hands.
"And there it goes, already back in the landlord's desk."
"You put it well," said the master, amazed by Korofyov's efficiency. "No papers. No man. And that's exactly what I don't have. I don't have any papers."
"Forgive me," Korofyov exclaimed. "This must be one of your hallucinations, for they are right here."
And Korofyov handed the master his papers. Then he rolled his eyes and whispered sweetly to Margarita.
"And here are your belongings, Margarita Nikolaevna."
He handed Margarita the singed notebook, the dried rose, the photograph, and, with particular care, the bank book.
10,000, just as you deposited, Margarita Nikolaevna. We have no need for others' property." "May my paws wither off before I touch the property of another,"
exclaimed the cat, puffing up and dancing on a suitcase to pack in all the copies of the ill-fated manuscript.
"And your papers as well,"
Korofyov continued, handing Margarita her papers. Then, turning to Volant, he reported respectfully,
"That is all, Messiah."
"No, not all,"
Volant replied, turning away from his globe.
"What would you have me do with your entourage, dearest Donna? I have no need for it personally."
Then Natasha ran through the open door, naked as before. She wrung her hands and shouted to Margarita,
"Be happy, Margarita Nikolaevna!"
She nodded to the master and spoke again to Margarita.
I knew where you used to go, you know.
Housekeepers know everything,
noted the cat, raising his paw meaningfully.
It is a mistake to think they are blind.
What do you want, Natasha? Margarita asked. You should go back to the mansion.
Margarita Nikolaevna, darling, Natasha pleaded, falling to her knees. Ask them.
She glanced at Volant.
If I could stay a witch, I don't want to go back to the mansion. I don't want to marry some engineer or technician. Monsieur Jacques proposed to me last night at the ball.
Natasha opened her fist, revealing some gold coins. Margarita directed a questioning look at Volant. He nodded. Natasha threw herself at Margarita's neck, gave her a resounding kiss, and flew out of the window with a victorious shout. Nikolai Ivanovich now stood in place of Natasha. He had regained his human appearance, but looked quite grim and even irritated.
Now, here's someone I'll be glad to let go, said Volant,
looking at Nikolai Ivanovich in disgust.
Exceptionally glad. So out of place he is here.
I request to be issued a document,
Nikolai Ivanovich said with great insistence, gazing round savagely, detailing my whereabouts last night.
For what purpose?
The cat asked sternly.
For the purpose of presenting it to my spouse and to the police,
Nikolai Ivanovich said firmly.
We don't normally hand out documents,
said the cat, frowning.
But very well, in your case, we'll make an exception.
And before Nikolai Ivanovich could come to his senses, the naked Hella was already sitting at a typewriter while the cat dictated.
This is to certify that the bearer, Nikolai Ivanovich, has spent the aforementioned night at Satan's ball, having been summoned there as a means of conveyance. Put a bracket there, Hella. In the bracket, write, hog. Signed, Behemoth.
And the date?
Nikolai Ivanovich squeaked.
No date. The date would invalidate the document,
the cat replied, scribbling his signature on the paper. He obtained a seal from somewhere, blew on it formally, stamped the word paid on the paper, and handed it to Nikolai Ivanovich. Then Nikolai Ivanovich vanished without a trace, and a new man appeared unexpectedly in his place.
Who is this now?
Volant asked distastefully, shielding his eyes from the candlelight. Varyonika hung his head, sighed, and said quietly,
Oh, let me go. I'm not cut out to be a vampire. I nearly did in Rimsky that evening with Hella, and I'm just not that bloodthirsty. Let me go.
What's this nonsense?
Volant asked, frowning.
Who's Rimsky? What's this rubbish?
Don't concern yourself with this, Messiah,
Azazello replied and turned to Varyonika.
Don't be rude on the phone. Don't lie on the phone. Is that clear? Are you going to stop?
Varyonika went giddy with joy. His face lit up and he started to babble without realizing what he was saying.
My sincerest, that is, oh, I would like to say, Your Majesty, right after dinner.
Varyonika pressed his hands to his heart and gazed at Azazello pleadingly.
Very well, go home,
the latter said, and Varyonika melted into the air.
Now, leave me alone with these two, Volant commanded, pointing at the master and Margarita.
Volant's order was carried out instantaneously. After a brief silence, Volant turned to the master.
So, it'll be the Arbat basement, then. And what of your writing? What of the dreams, the inspirations?
I have no more dreams or inspirations either, the master replied. Nothing interests me save for her. Again he placed his hand on Margarita's head. I am broken. I am fed up. And I want to be in the basement.
And what of your novel, of Pilot?
I hated this novel, the master replied.
I have endured too much on its account.
I beg you, Margarita lamented, don't talk like that. Why do you torture me so? You know I've put my whole life into your work.
Turning to Voland, Margarita added, don't listen to him, Messiah, he's exhausted.
But surely you must keep writing about something, Voland continued. If you've exhausted the procurator's character, why not start portraying this Aloysius fellow, for instance?
The master smiled. Lepshenikova would never print that, and moreover, it's not very interesting.
So how will you live? You'll be destitute.
And gladly so,
the master replied, pulling Margarita towards him and hugging her shoulders, and added, she'll come to her senses and leave me.
I somehow doubt that, Voland said through his teeth, and continued, and so the man who wrote the story of Pontius Pilate retreats to a basement, intending to sit there by a lamp in poverty.
Margarita broke away from the master and spoke with great passion.
I did all I could. I whispered the most enticing things to him, but he refused.
I know what you whispered to him, Voland objected, but it was not the most enticing.
As for you, he turned to the master, smiling, let me tell you that your novel still has a few surprises in store for you.
That is very sad, replied the master.
No, no, it is not sad, Voland said. Nothing terrible will happen. Well, Margarita Nikolaevna, it's all done. Have you any further claims against me?
Of course not, Messiah.
Then take this as a souvenir, Voland said.
He reached under his pillow and produced a small golden horseshoe studded with diamonds.
No, no, I couldn't possibly.
Are you going to argue with me?
Voland asked, smiling. Since Margarita's cloak had no pockets, she tied the horseshoe in a napkin.
Then something amazed her. She looked at the moonlit window and said, here's something I don't understand. How can it still be midnight when it should have been morning long ago?
Sometimes it's nice to extend a festive midnight such as this,
Voland replied.
I wish you all the best.
Margarita stretched both her hands towards Voland, as if in prayer, but did not dare approach him.
Farewell, farewell, she exclaimed quietly.
Until we meet again, said Voland.
Margarita in her black cloak and the master in his hospital gown went out into the hall of the jeweler's wife's apartment, where Voland's entourage was waiting for them by the light of a candle. They set out, with Hella carrying the suitcase containing the novel, and Margarita Nikolaevna's modest belongings, and the cat helping her. As they passed through the front door, Korovyov bowed and vanished, while the rest followed downstairs. The staircase was empty. As they passed the third-floor landing, they heard a soft knock, but paid it no mind. When they reached the sixth staircase entrance, Azazello blew into the air. As they went out into the courtyard, where the moon did not reach, they saw a man in boots and a cap dead asleep on the porch. A large black car with extinguished headlights stood outside. The hazy silhouette of a rook showed through the windshield. They were about to get in the car when Margarita cried out softly and desperately,
oh God, I've lost the horseshoe.
Get in the car, said Azazello, and wait for me. I'll be back shortly, just as soon as I sort out what's going on here.
And he went back inside. What happened was this. Shortly before Margarita and the master left with their escorts, a dried-up little woman came out of apartment number 48, carrying her handbag and a can. It was the very same Anushka who had spilled the sunflower oil at the turnstile on Wednesday, to Berlioz's great misfortune. No one knew, or likely ever will, what that woman was doing in Moscow, or how she made her living. The only thing known about her was that she could be seen daily carrying either a can or a handbag or both in the paraffin shop or at the marketplace or at the gates of the building or on the staircase or most often in the kitchen of apartment number 48 where she resided. There was another crucial detail. Wherever she appeared or stayed, a scandal would immediately break out. And finally, that her nickname was The Plague. For some reason, Anushka the Plague would always get up extremely early, and today some unknown force roused her at an ungodly hour, just after midnight. The key turned in the door, Anushka's nose appeared in the doorway, and then the rest of her followed. She shut the door and was about to head off somewhere when a door slammed on the landing above and someone tumbled down the stairs. Crashing into Anushka, the falling body pushed her aside with such force that she bumped her head on the wall. "What the devil are you doing here in your long johns?" Anushka screamed, clutching the back of her head. Wearing only his underwear and a cap, but carrying a suitcase, the man answered Anushka in a frantic yet sleepy voice with his eyes closed.
"The water pump, the acid treatment, the cost of the whitewash alone!"
He started to cry, then barked,
"Out!"
and was off, only not down the stairs, but back up to where the economist had knocked out the windowpane with his foot. The man flew out into the courtyard, feet first, through that very window. Gasping, Anushka forgot all about her head and rushed to the window herself. She lay down on her stomach, on the landing, and stuck her head out of the window, expecting to see the man with the suitcase lying dead on the asphalt, lit by the courtyard lantern. But there was no one there. One could only guess that the strange, sleepy character had flown away like a bird, leaving absolutely no trace behind. Anushka crossed herself and thought, "Some apartment, that number 50. No wonder people are talking. What a place." She barely had time to finish that thought when the door above slammed again and a second man ran downstairs. Anushka flattened herself against the wall and saw a rather respectable bearded man, although his face looked ever so slightly porcine. The man whisked by her and left the house via the window in the same manner as the first, again showing absolutely no intention of plunging to his death on the asphalt. Anushka forgot all about her own business and remained on the staircase, muttering, gasping, and crossing herself. A third man, with a round, clean-shaven face and wearing a belted shirt, ran downstairs and fluttered out of the window a short while later. To Anushka's credit, she was very curious and decided to wait for more miracles. The door upstairs opened and a whole group of people started downstairs, not running, but walking at a regular pace. Anushka ran away from the window and down the stairs towards her own apartment, where she opened the door quickly and hid behind it. Glittering with frenzied curiosity, her eye appeared in the crack she left open. A strange, pale, stubbly, possibly sick man, wearing a gown and a black cap, was walking downstairs on unsteady legs. A lady, wearing what appeared in the darkness to be a black cassock, was leading him carefully under the arm. It was hard to tell whether the lady was barefoot or wearing some sort of half-shredded transparent slippers, probably imported. Ugh, forget the shoes. The lady was naked.
Why?
Yes, she just threw the cassock over her bare skin. Now, that's some apartment. Anushka's soul sang with joy as she anticipated gossiping with the neighbours the next day. A completely naked lady with a suitcase followed the strangely dressed woman downstairs. An enormous black cat was fussing around the suitcase. Anushka almost squeaked out loud and wiped her eyes. A limping foreigner with a crooked eye brought up the rear of the procession. He wore a white formal shirt and tie, but no jacket.
As the entire group headed downstairs past Anushka, something clinked on the landing. Hearing the steps grow fainter, Anushka slithered out of her door like a snake. She put down her can and dropped on her stomach, groping around with her hands. She found a napkin with something heavy inside. Anushka's eyes nearly popped out of their sockets when she unwrapped the little bundle. They lit up with wolfish fire as she held the precious trinket close to her face. A torrent arose in Anushka's brain. I haven't seen anything. I don't know anything. To the nephew? Or cut it into pieces, pick out the gemstones, and then sell one at a time. One on Petrovka, one on Smolensky, and most importantly, I haven't seen anything, and I don't know anything. Anushka hid the find in her shirt, grabbed her can, and was about to slip back into her apartment, delaying her trip to town. Suddenly, hell knows where from, the white-shirted, jacketless man appeared before her and whispered quietly,
Give back the horseshoe and the napkin.
What horseshoe and napkin? Anushka asked, feigning innocence quite masterfully.
I don't know of any napkin. Are you drunk, mister?
Hard as the handrails of a bus and just as cold, the man's fingers closed around Anushka's throat without a word, completely blocking the passage of air to her lungs. The can fell from her hands to the floor. After depriving Anushka of air for a little while, the jacketless foreigner removed his hand from her throat. Gulping air, Anushka smiled.
Oh, the horseshoe, she began. Right this minute. So it's your horseshoe. I was passing by and there it was, in the napkin. I picked it up so as no one would take it, or else you'd never see it again.
Upon receiving the horseshoe and the napkin, the foreigner began bowing and clicking his heels before Anushka, shaking her hand firmly and showering her with warm thanks in a heavy foreign accent.
I am most indebted to you, madam. That little horseshoe is a treasured heirloom. Allow me to give you 200 rubles for having restored it to me.
And he immediately produced the money from his waistcoat pocket and handed it to Anushka. Smiling frantically, Anushka could only exclaim,
Oh, thank you so much. Merci, merci.
Heading back down, the generous foreigner traversed an entire flight of stairs in a single bound. But before disappearing completely, he shouted from below without a trace of accent.
And the next time you find someone's property, you old hag, take it to the police instead of stuffing it down your front.
Her head ringing with confusion from all these staircase shenanigans, Anushka went on shouting reflexively,
Merci, merci, merci,
long after the foreigner was gone. The car also vanished from the courtyard. After returning Volan's gift to Margarita, Azazello asked her if she was comfortably seated and bid her goodbye. Hella gave Margarita a smacking kiss. The cat pressed his nose to her hand, and they all waved to the master, who had sunk into the corner of his seat and remained lifelessly still. They signalled to the rook and dissolved into the air rather than burdening themselves with climbing the stairs. The rook turned on the headlights and rolled out of the gate past another soundly sleeping man. And the lights of the large black car blended in with the other lights on the loud, sleepless Sadovaya. An hour later, in the basement of a small house in an Arbat alley, everything was just as it had been on that horrible autumn night a year ago. In the first room, Margarita was sitting at a table covered with a velvet tablecloth, lit by a shaded lamp and decorated with a small bouquet of lilies of the valley, and weeping quietly from shock and happiness. The notebook mangled by the fire lay before her, and a pile of untouched notebooks towered nearby. The house was silent,
In the small adjacent room, the master lay in a deep sleep on the couch, covered by his hospital gown. His breath was even and noiseless. Having wept her fill, Margarita reached for the intact notebooks and found the part she had been rereading before her encounter with Azazello beneath the Kremlin wall. Margarita did not want to sleep. She caressed the manuscript tenderly, as one caresses a beloved cat. She turned it in her hands and examined it from every angle, studying the title page one moment and turning all the way to the back the next. She was suddenly overcome by the horrible thought that it was all a trick, that any moment now the notebooks would disappear from her hands, and she would wake up in her bedroom in the mansion and be forced to drown herself. But it was the last such thought, the final echo of prolonged suffering. Nothing disappeared. The omnipotent Volant was truly omnipotent, and she could ruffle the pages till dawn if she wanted. She could study them and kiss them and reread the words. Darkness, descending from the Mediterranean Sea, engulfed the city so hated by the procurator. Yes, darkness.